52. Purge.
I don't like it.
The prison barge Purge's newly appointed navigator and second-in-command, Bisley Cloth, was at the bridge, still engaged in the process of hailing the gaudily arrayed space yacht that had positioned itself directly in front of him, when the entire console erupted in a storm of proximity alarms. Cloth snapped them off briskly, taking control of the situation with a quiet confidence that belied his age. At 22, he was still a young man, but he'd already been working aboard the Purge for 5 years, since he was old enough to hire on for a full share. Hauling convicts and local scum out to various detainment stations and galactic penal colonies, including Coghive 7, wasn't the easiest way to earn a living. Yet he'd quickly gotten used to it, most of it anyway, including the occasional unwanted encounter with tramp vessels adrift in the Outer Rim. And although the Purge was really no more than a garbage barge retrofitted with holding cells and a makeshift medbay, Cloth had a vision of one day transforming it into a floating prison of its own, one in which he might even someday be in charge. He would be Warden Cloth. Today the Purge was carrying 46 inmates, human and non-human alike.
Mr. Cloth.
That was the Purge's captain, Wyatt Styrene, limping across the bridge toward him, his pale blue eyes alight with reckless enthusiasm. A former smuggler himself, Styrene knew these uncharted systems as well as anyone Cloth had ever met, and he'd never run from a fight.
What's the word?
Proximity alarms from that space yacht? Cloth nodded, indicating the luxury ship that had still not responded to their call. I've got it under control. It's not... A sudden volley of explosions slammed into the Purge, rocking them hard enough that Cloth had to grab the console in front of him and hang on. Checking the screens before him, he saw for the first time what he'd somehow overlooked until it was too late. An attack swarm of Z-95 headhunters closing in from below them, firing on their underside in a steady volley of concussion missiles. The alarm screamed.
Where did they come from?
Cloth shouted, unaware for the moment that he was asking the question aloud. Of course, the headhunters had been the ones that had triggered the proximity alarms he'd foolishly attributed to the space yacht in front of them. A ruse that he couldn't believe he'd fallen for, although Styrene's expression seemed untroubled. In fact, Cloth could have sworn the old pirate had a wry grin on his face.
They want a tussle? We'll give them a tussle.
Without glancing back at Cloth, he powered up the full retinue of the Purge's weapon suite.
Go secure our cargo, Mr. Cloth.
Captain?
Go on. I've got the bridge. Besides, he gestured toward the hatch. It's almost feeding time for them, isn't it?
Cloth strode quickly back through the Purge, nodding at the guards on either side as he opened the hatchway leading to the vessel's main hold.
Everything secure down here?
Locked down,
the guard shouted back.
What's going on topside?
Not sure,
Cloth said, making a split-second decision to keep the arrival of the headhunters to himself for now, for the sake of maintaining some semblance of order.
Captain's at the bridge now, it's under control.
Tell that to them,
the guard said, pointing down into the hold, where the Purge had been outfitted with its containment cells. Cloth could already hear the convicts down below, some of them screeching, shouting, or demanding answers in the near darkness. Typically, the inmates they brought out to Coghive 7 had lapsed into a silent stupor of boredom by this point in the voyage, but the blaster fire had stirred them up, and Cloth heard them calling out to find out if the ship was under attack.
I'm going down to check the main cargo hold, Cloth told the guard. Who else is down here?
Carrier and Hayes.
Two good men, Cloth thought, or at least battle-tested. He nodded, already ducking forward.
Tell the captain if I'm not back up in 5 minutes.
Something broadsided the vessel from amidships, heavier than a turbo laser, almost like they'd been struck by an asteroid or another ship. Cloth was already halfway down the gangway amid the holding cells when it struck, and the impact pitched him back into the console wall behind him. It was followed by an unfamiliar high-pitched grinding noise from somewhere below, like an oscillating blade shearing through steel. The guard beside him hoisted his blaster, checking the cartridge, his face drawn tight with nerves.
What the cark is that?
It feels like... Cloth began, and the words snapped off in his throat.
It feels like we're being boarded.
Seconds later, from down below, he heard it. The voices of the prisoners had fallen absolutely silent.
Is there a ghost?
What in the name of... From behind her desk, Siddiqui Blur was watching the holoscreens that showed the events down in the cargo hold, the CLL load lifter pivoting on its gyros and thundering into the wall. Status report. What's going on down there? Next to her, 3D didn't respond. The droid had been trying in vain to communicate with the CLL unit for the last 5 minutes, and its silence was not reassuring.
My apologies, Warden.
3D withdrew its adapter from the wall console.
I'm afraid the load lifter's motivator has been manually compromised somehow. I cannot access it from here.
What do you mean, manually compromised?
Someone rewired it on site.
That's absurd. Cursing aloud, Siddiqui looked at the screen. The crushed remains of the decapitated and trampled Vesto Sliffer were sprawled across the floor, almost unrecognizable. She had no idea what the moon had been doing down there, nor did she particularly care. The sight of his corpse elicited nothing more profound in her than a headache. But it was one more headache that she was going to have to deal with at the worst possible time. She glanced at the chrono display. What's the ETA on that incoming prison barge?
The purge is due to arrive within 30 minutes.
You've confirmed that?
Captain Styrene made contact when the vessel first came out of hyperspace. I haven't heard from them since then.
30 minutes. Siddiqui stood with her hands gripping either side of the desk and remained there, perfectly motionless for the moment, allowing herself to take stock of the situation. By themselves, a malfunctioning droid and the untimely death of an IBC representative weren't catastrophic, but given what was at stake, she sensed the hand of something far more dangerous behind it. And why had Dakarai disappeared? Where was her brother when she needed his counsel the most?
Warden, I have Gaming Commissioner Chloris on the line. Shall I have him leave a message?
Yes. She stopped and reconsidered. No. Wait. Put him through. Chloris's face appeared on the screen directly in front of her. He didn't wait for her salutation.
Siddiqui, what is going on over there?
Commissioner, she smiled, finding it surprisingly easy to do. You're looking well. Chloris held up his hand to stop her.
You're operating in direct violation of the Commission's orders to shut down your gambling operation. Now I'm getting reports of ongoing hostility between inmates and guards.
I wasn't aware that penal reform fell under the aegis of the Gaming Commission.
Don't do this, Siddiqui. Don't put me in this position.
On the contrary, Commissioner. Siddiqui's voice changed, darkening ever so slightly, her eyes never leaving his image on the screen. It's you who put me into this position. Long ago.
I failed to see...
I didn't want to bring this up, but you've left me no choice. She tapped a series of commands into the holo console, and a new series of images superimposed themselves over the display on the monitor. Do you recognize this place? For a moment, Chloris didn't answer.
Of course. It's the Outlander Casino and Resort on Coruscant.
Where we first met. Siddiqui said as the next series of images came up. Remember this?
Now Cloris's entire face went blank with shock as he stared at the surveillance photos.
Where did you get these?
It doesn't matter. What matters is what the board members would have to say about a respected commissioner finding himself with a young, highly impressionable casino manager in what you'll have to admit is a very compromising position. She leaned forward slightly. Can you see the images clearly? I can increase the bandwidth if you prefer. There are some very good shots of...
Those photos prove nothing!
You're right. Perhaps I should just forward them to the commission and let them draw their own conclusions. She waited for a moment. Unless you have another suggestion.
Enough.
Cloris's shoulder sagged.
What is it that you want?
Ah. Siddiqui nodded. Now we're making progress. Here's how it's going to work. As soon as we finish this conversation, you're going to reverse your ruling against my operation, reinstating Coghive 7's rights and privileges as a gaming facility under the Commission's regulations, making it fully operational, effective immediately.
I couldn't possibly...
And I want you to contact your friend Lars Winnick at the IBC and come up with a plausible explanation for the unexpected disappearance of one of their field agents.
What?
His name is Vesto Slipher. I'll send the specifics along directly. How you manage it does not concern me, as long as I'm not subjected to any more of these degrading spot audits.
Siddiqui?
Cloris reached up to clutch at the collar of his tunic, struggling to loosen it.
You grossly overestimate my scope of influence in these matters.
And you, Dragomir, grossly underestimate the amount of damage that these surveillance photos could inflict on your career, she said. You've done great things for the Commission and the relationship between gambling communities. You've driven galactic revenue to new heights. A man like you might be senator one day. And after that... Who knows? She let the words sink in, knowing they would saturate his colossal ego. Do you really want to throw all that away over some cheap tryst with a casino manager? Cloris gazed at her. A faintly gleaming mustache of sweat had broken out across his upper lip, and his eyes looked raw, rimmed with red. Finally, he shook his head.
I forgot how obstinate you become when you want something.
Don't forget again, Siddiqui told him. And before he could answer, she pressed the button to break off the transmission. She heard 3D approaching her with a refill of her coffee.
Well done, if I may say so.
Child's play. She held out the cup, allowing him to fill it. Where's inmate 11240? 3D turned to her, not understanding.
Excuse me?
Clear the monitors. Show me all the tunnels and lifts leading away from the cargo bay. Roll the feedback 5 minutes. Do it now. The holoscreens flickered and changed, displaying a dozen different walkways, every possible exit from the cargo bay. Siddiqui took her time examining each screen individually, using the time to consider what had just happened. She hadn't wanted to confront Cloris with the surveillance photos, not because she didn't want to humiliate him. The man's reputation, like his towering vanity and none-too-secret political ambitions, could not have mattered to her less, but because the photos represented the last and most potent form of leverage that she had over the Gaming Commission. Every predatory instinct within her had wanted to hold on to the images until they could be exploited for maximum value. Now they were out there. And she froze, her thoughts breaking off as she caught sight of something on one of the screens, an odd bluish blur in the corner of one of the turbo lifts. From here it looked like nothing more than a visual aberration, like a ripple of slightly discolored heat from an exhaust vent. Except that there were no such vents in the lift, and
The ripple shifted noticeably. Siddiqui leaned closer, staring at the image. There was something inside the lift. Something that didn't want to be seen. She hit the alarm. Hotbox. Hotbox. The lift stopped, and Mole knew he'd been caught. He glanced down at the blue witch in his hand and then dropped it with disgust, letting it hit the floor with a clink. It rolled to the corner and lay there spluttering feebly for a moment before finally dying out. It served him right for trusting the moon's gadget for an instant longer than he had to. He never should have taken the lift back up from the cargo bay. Now he was trapped in here. For an instant, he imagined Slipher's severed head lying in the corner laughing at him. No matter. Such thoughts were useless to him now. He glanced up at the ceiling, a meter above his head, and then the walls around him, instinctively taking stock of any possible way out. Suddenly, the lift itself felt very small, more like a cage or a coffin. Bracing his hands on one smooth wall and his legs on the other, he lifted himself upward and began to climb his way to the ceiling. It was a slow process, but there was a maintenance hatch up there, in all likelihood bolted shut from the outside. He didn't know if he'd be able to get it open without losing his grip on the walls, and even if he did...
Very impressive.
A woman's voice said from the speaker inside the lift, a voice that Maul recognized immediately as belonging to Siddiqui Blur.
Of course, at this point, I should have expected nothing less from Coghive 7's most celebrated inmate.
Ignoring her, Maul crawled another meter upward, keeping his arms, legs, and shoulders rigid to hold himself in position. At this angle, the only way to get the hatch open would be to slam his head against it.
There's no sense trying to get out that way. The lift is industrial grade, durasteel reinforced from the outside. We use it to transport our more imposing inmates, like that Wampa you fought. It's got some very interesting features, from my perspective at least.
Something clicked and began to hum inside the walls.
Even if you manage to escape, there's nothing inside the shaft to hold on to. Which means you'll die in there, either slowly or quickly, depending on how ambitious you are.
Maul said nothing.
Still determined to injure yourself? Here, let me help you.
The lift jerked upward, then plunged. Maul slammed face first into the ceiling as it dropped straight down. It halted, and he hit the floor hard. Sprawled on his back with the wall spinning around him, he reflexively shot out his arms and legs again to stabilize himself for the next move. But the lift began to rise smoothly upward again, as if nothing had disturbed its passage.
I'd like to make you a proposition. As you may have guessed, we don't get many inmates like you in here. In fact, you're arguably one of a kind. So, in the spirit of entrepreneurial enterprise, I'd like to do the only thing that makes any sense.
Maul glared at the speaker. Kill yourself and save the universe the trouble?
Not quite. I'd like to offer you a job.
My answer is no.
You haven't heard my terms.
It doesn't matter.
His expression remained unchanged.
I prefer death.
At least do yourself the courtesy of admitting you're curious. You seem almost supernaturally adept at isolating and exploiting the weaknesses of your opponents under the most adverse of circumstances. So.
She paused long enough for Maul to wonder if he was supposed to be hanging on her every word.
This is what I propose. You come to work here in the executive level of Coghive 7, where you will report directly to me. there are certain aspects of our operation here that you might find very illuminating.
What aspects?
Before I get into the details, I would expect an oath of absolute loyalty. Of course, you'll enjoy complete autonomy, stay here in a luxury suite, and receive a generous salary that reflects exactly how valuable you truly are to this operation. Who knows?
Something eased into her voice, a note of bemusement that Maul could actually hear, though he couldn't see her face.
You may even discover what you've been searching for all along. What do you say?
You're forgetting one thing,
Maul said, bracing himself against the wall opposite the speaker.
What's that?
This place where you live.
Yes?
It's still a prison.
Pumping one leg straight out, he drove his heel into
doing?
The speaker
no.
and smashed
Stop
it to pieces, strangling the warden's voice off into a fuzzy, digitized warble, and then silence. The speaker itself popped loose from its housing, dangling down on a tangle of multicolored wiring. Seconds later, the lift stopped again. He'd expected nothing less. Having not received the answer she wanted, the warden was going to make him hurt. Apparently, she wasn't ready to trigger the charges implanted in his hearts, but she wasn't going to let him get away either. Working quickly, Maul yanked the dislodged speaker plating from its wires, paused just long enough to inspect the beveled edge, and decided that it would have to suffice, and began the slow creeping process back up toward the hatchway at the top of the lift. Halfway up, he noticed it. Around him, the Durasteel walls were starting to get hot.